I had a video come up in my memories on Facebook the other day of a duck hunting trip I took to Argentina, and it made me just want to start talking about that trip again and kind of relive some of those memories. It was a bucket list trip I was able to take 5 years ago with Jim Riley, and Jim's going to join us now to talk about it and talk about planning another trip down to Argentina. He's with Riley's Outdoor Consulting. Jim, how's it going? Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, it's going great, Brett. Long time since we've been to Argentina, and you're right, we need to go back.
It was fun. I know you and I just kind of talked a little bit about that trip just after that video came up, and it was fun just kind of reliving some of those memories. And I know you've been down there multiple times. That's obviously the only time that I've been down there, but just so many interesting things about going down there. So it was fun to kind of relive that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, bringing you down there was really fun for me because being you were a newbie, you were like a kid in a candy store with your love of dogs, your love of ducks, the different species. These were all species you had never seen before. So every one you would shoot, I remember you'd pick it up and look at it and look at all the iridescence and the colors. And that was great for me because a lot of people that have been there don't get to see that first time appreciation, if you know what I mean. Like the first time you catch a big Mille Lacs walleye or something.
Well, I love that's one of the things I like about ducks is just seeing the different species and the different colors, the different vocalizations they make, the different habits. And I want to talk about the duck hunting down there, our trip, what it's like now, also the perdiz and the doves too. But let's just start with what we're dealing with right now. Everybody healthy where you're at, Jim? How's it going?
Yeah, everybody's good here. I actually did a road trip. I relocated some of my camping and fishing gear to Minnesota from South Dakota by way of Colorado, if that makes sense. I had to do two trips, and yeah, it was strange, Brett. You're on the highway, and it's basically semis, U-Hauls, and people pulling boats and campers. You really didn't see a lot of other people, and I guess that's good. People are even social distancing on the highway, and a lot of respect. Everyone's giving a lot of each other a lot of room on the roads, and I think we're all just busting at the seams to get outdoors, though.
For sure, absolutely.
I know I am.
And you had to put you were planning a move too, weren't you?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, my wife and I had bought a lot in Florida, right on a sanctuary. I talked her into it, brought her in, and said, "How cool is this?" Little did she know it was connected to Boca Grande Pass, one of the best tarpon fishing areas in the world. And we were ready to fly back down and sign the contract for our home build when this all hit. So we called our builder and said, "Hey, we're going to pop smoke and plan to do this another day." And luckily he said, "Hey, that's good. We'll keep your plans. We'll keep everything. And when you're ready, let's start things back up." So right for now, we're going to be content in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and try to spend as much time at the cabin in Wisconsin as we can chasing big smallies.
Riley's Outdoor Consulting, your business helps people take hunting and fishing trips all over the world. Obviously, that's also kind of on hold right now. What are your thoughts on the situation and how it's going to shake out?
Well, I tell you what, first of all, it's shocking. I don't think anyone ever thought we'd experience anything like this in our lifetime. And things will shake out country by country. We might open up here in the U.S., but other countries might not let us in, and vice versa. So I have no idea. Answering questions from clients has been very tough. The easiest part for me was Argentina because the government closed the entire hunting season.
Oh,
so that's
really?
Pretty easy to... We formulated a plan with the outfitter, and the outfitters I used down there and said, "Okay, guys, you can roll this to next year, or you can give up your deposit, but you lose it. However, we will help you sell that trip for next year because we have plenty of time." Hmm. Most trips, as you know, you book, and there's that money's on a one-way funnel. It's not like the airline. When it's booked, that money's gone. There's no deposits that are returned. There's trip insurance you could buy, but I posted many times on my Facebook page how the trip insurance companies were handling this. And if you were not going to go because of fear, they weren't going to cover that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if a country opens up and you decide to go and the U.S. is open up to travel and you're just afraid to go, you're probably not going to get any refunds. Be prepared to lose your money or roll that trip. And did you see the piece Jim Shockey put out?
I didn't.
Jim Shockey put out a 2-minute piece that was amazing. Best thing I've ever seen Jim do. And it discusses this very issue of outfitter survival around the world. A lot of their initial deposits are used to buy trucks, buy supplies, get leases, literally stock animals. You know, in New Zealand, on big red stags, they have to, you know, buy those and see that they survive through, you know, two hunting season. They're buying fuel up front, boats, motors, gas, paying guide fees. You just can't turn that off. So I'm afraid without our U.S. dollar traveling the world, there's going to be a lot of these foreign operations that go out of business.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
That breaks my heart.
Yeah, we actually talked about that with the guys from Saskatchewan, which are actually not far from Jim Shockey's turf up there. They said the exact same thing. I mean, at Tazen, we bought all brand new motors for the boats this year. They're sitting there ready to go to the lodge, and we don't know if we're going to have a season up there. So we've already got a lot of expenses, or they've already got a lot of expenses on the books in anticipation of all these deposits that were going to be coming in. And even if we do, as we discussed, even if we do open up and have a season this summer, there's been a whole stretch of time here where we haven't been able to book anybody, book new clients, or take deposits. You know, a lot of the people that had said that they're going to book a trip this year, all of a sudden they're kind of holding out saying, I don't know. I'm going to hold on to my deposit for now. So it could be absolutely devastating for a lot of guides and outfitters around the world.
Sure. And a lot of people used their returns. We have a lot of older clients, let's face it. The people that can travel, a lot of them are over 60. They've done well. They're using those returns on their investment accounts or retirement accounts. And the last, obviously, several years have been fantastic. So they've been saying, let's take the kids and go on a trip, a fishing or hunting trip. Well, that's gone right now. Hopefully it bounces back. We're all crossing our fingers. But if it doesn't, we're going to see the whole horizon of the hunting and fishing industry paid change. Now, there are some positives, not really for me in international travel. I do North America. But what in talking to the other old timers in my business, at 51, I'm an old timer. I've been in it 25 years. We're looking forward to coming back to the U.S. And putting on some hosted trips. I have a friend working in Pinehurst, North Carolina. He's doing driven pheasant hunts and sporting clays, a 2-day event. Bring your wife, bring your son, stay at a beautiful manor and shoot pheasants and clays and have a great time. Hopefully that's up and running by October, November. That's when they want to run these hunts, in November, October, November, December, something like that. We've always got Texas, which is a plethora of game, everything from whitetail to hella hog hunting. So there is hopefully some bright spots. The Dakotas are amazing, as you know. You probably would be mad if I give any spots up there, so I'll limit it to say the Dakotas. Luckily, South Dakota has the draw duck hunting license. I think you know that's my little hideout. Mm-hmm. When I draw that permit, I go by myself. I take my dog, and we just have a good time.
So when it comes to travel, I know for a while there at the beginning of the whole COVID-19 situation, airfare was ridiculously cheap. And I had a lot of friends that were buying airplane tickets for later this summer or this fall because they were getting them just at steep, steep discounts. And we all kind of figured this would be over pretty quick. We'd maybe going back to, you know, somewhat of a normal life maybe by summer. I certainly didn't expect it to last this long. The airline industry is down, I think, 95% right now. It's a terrible time. But are you seeing, you know, for a trip for next year, are you telling people, hey, you know, you could get deals on airfare for a trip for next year at this point?
Well, here's the strange thing, Brad. A lot of, like, our Argentina for this year was 90% booked. So if 90% of the people roll, I only got 10% open.
Interesting.
So I'm really in no drastic hurry to book trips like that. I would say if you're hunting for airfare, hunt for 2021 or be ready to pull the trigger the minute, you know, the bands start opening up. But, you know, people have to pay attention to what I said. They don't get it. Just because the U.S. opens up travel doesn't mean the outside countries are going to open up. Some of the feedback I'm getting is China is public enemy number one, Italy number two, and we're number three. Probably just because we publicize it more than anybody. But a lot of countries like New Zealand, they're talking about being shut down for a year, Brett.
Oof-ta.
And that's a big part of my business. It's an amazing destination to go to. It's safe. The hunting and traveling and camaraderie there is incredible. But they're an isolated island country, multiple islands, obviously. And they're going to keep people out, which is a shame. I never thought I would see this, like I said.
Yeah, I don't think anybody did. What about like the Southern Hemisphere? It seems like, and maybe I just don't pay as much attention to it, but how has COVID-19 affected like those parts of the world?
Well, it's funny you should ask that because my niece was down in Ecuador. Her and her husband were teaching down there. And they were told, get out on this plane or you can't get out. So they left their car down there, all their possessions, basically. They grabbed a suitcase or whatever they could fly home and got out of Dodge. The rumors you were hearing about Central and South America is, oh, the heat is great and it kills the virus. Don't worry. Well, I have friends that work down there in other capacities in the hunting business, and their feedback from Colombia, Bolivia, Peru is that's not the case. There was widespread deaths from the COVID. Even in Ecuador, where my niece was, they were just the hospitals putting people on the street, and you know, dead bodies, and then the wagon would come pick them up and drag them away and burn them. So, no, that heat thing to me is nonsense. I don't think this, and I'm no expert. I'm just a dude that hunts and fishes around the world, but I would say this thing is much more powerful than people want to believe. I mean, we all want to believe it's nothing and we can go out and do whatever we want. I'm one of them. You know, my wife, as you know, is 27, 28 years in the military, spent time in Iraq. We looked at each other when this broke out and we said, hey, let's go home and go to Mayo Clinic, have them give us COVID, put us in a nice room and draw our plasma and use it. And, you know, other people at that time were like, what are you two idiots talking about? Well, now that's the standard. They're drawing plasma out of people that have survived the COVID and have the antibodies, because that would be the, not cure, but that would give you the strength, better strength than your body trying to fight it alone. So I think that's what we need to be doing, is getting as much plasma out of people as we can and getting it into these older people and people that are susceptible to this virus quickly. And I don't see a whole bunch of healthy people on the news dying from this, though, Brett.
Right. And that's the underlying discussion taking place with a lot of people right now is, and it's starting to get political, and that's obviously why there's been a lot of protesting. And I mean, we could debate this for hours and days here on the show. Jim, and you know, bottom line is it's, obviously, it's been devastating to the health of definitely a certain segment of our population, and it's been devastating to business. So,
yes,
what the right answer is right now, I'm not quite sure. But let's do this. Let's just think optimistically for a minute, and maybe let's move to 2021, and let's talk about if everything opens up and people are healthy, they've got a vaccine or whatever, we're allowed to travel down to Argentina again. Let's talk about that, because going back 5 years to that trip we took down there, I mean, I was able to find, at that time, I was able to find airfare down to Argentina for less than $1,200. And I remember you saying to me, I'm like, wow, that's a pretty good deal. And when we got to Buenos Aires and just being able to spend, we were down there for about a week and we spent a day on the front end and the back end in Buenos Aires there. That's worth the trip to me. I mean, obviously I went down there for the duck hunting, but just to be able to see, you know, South America and see the city, see the culture and just have that adventure, to me is worth the trip going down there, Jim.
I agree 100%. And going back to how you started you know, your sentence here, I would say that we're going to experience the biggest case of cabin fever exit you've ever seen. People are going to burst at the seams, I believe, to travel. My wife's already got me looking at these crazy tall ship cruises, and I think I might do one next January. We might just book it and say, heck with it, you know, lead the charge. And what you're saying about getting the most out of the trip, absolutely. I was just talking to guys today about what you experienced down there, all the different things you see in Argentina. I mean, a lot of people think it's a third world country. Little would they know the size of that highway, that or that road that runs through town. You remember that? I took you there.
Oh, yeah.
Eight or 10 lanes. And then the cemetery in Recoleta.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that in my life. So whenever I bring someone, I say, I'm taking you to a cemetery. And they're like, dude, have you lost it? And then by the time they're done with that, they're like, I'm not going to be able to explain this to anybody back home.
It's wild.
It's so amazing.
Yeah,
and it's not spooky either. Didn't feel haunted, did it?
Every time we go around another corner, Jimmy would be like, "Ugh, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think are we done here yet?"
Heck no. There's like some general on the wall or on a monument, but it's funny. You can read all the things about the people, and it's, I don't know. I find it very interesting. I go in there and it's good. And you got to experience some of the great food and wine and,
oh, yeah,
and the other things that make, and we're just focusing on Argentina, but all over the world, you know. I've been blessed to have been to many, many countries. And people ask, what's your favorite? Now I say, well, my favorite's the one I'm at that time.
Yeah.
You know, I go in there with an open attitude, and I try to get off the beaten path, and I've taught my wife to do that. Get back where people aren't necessarily providing tours to cruise ships. Get back like we do when we hunt and fish. We're with the locals. We're chasing wild boars around. And I know that had you all wound up wanting to chase those wild boars when we cut tracks. But you see all the crazy stuff out in the country.
Yeah.
Not in the city,
well,
you know.
Not just the wild boars, but there was animals all over the place. And all kinds of different animals that I'd, you know, you see them on TV or you read about them in books. But to be able to see some of those animals in person. And Jim, you kind of nailed it. You know, we did spend the front end and the back end of that trip in the city, but the rest of it was out in rural Argentina, out in the country, where, you know, it's kind of like where, honestly, I felt like I was driving around South Dakota in a lot of places. There was cattle over here, a cornfield over there, a bean field over there. The climate was very similar to what we experience here in our region, except that they're backwards. It's their fall is our spring, so it's fall down there right now. But the one difference, the one thing that you would see for sure that would make you remember that you're in Argentina and not you know, not South Dakota, is that you'd be sitting there in the duck slough, and a flamingo would fly by.
How about the noise in the morning in the slough or the marsh? You would look at me and I'd say, yeah, that's caracaras. It's all kinds of, I call them the jungle birds. Those marshes are so loud. You can't even explain to someone how loud it is in the morning.
I hope I still got it, because I recorded some of those sounds on my phone for the day that I would want to use them, which is now. I'm hoping I still got them on here. But some of those noises, it was just wild. Very surreal, very atmospheric, and again reminded you that you're not in Kansas anymore. You know.
Right. The other thing, it's different than how you and I grew up. We hunted a lot of public land. So you hear boom, 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 boom,
right,
boom, 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 boom. All you hear down there is you and I.
Wildlife. And you and I. And you're right. And actually, that's literally the next question on my list that I was going to ask you. Is there, when you go down there, you know, particularly for duck hunting, the locals don't hunt them. There isn't a lot of pressure on those ducks down there.
No, they don't really hunt them, and they don't manage them. We're hoping they change the management end of it, you know, because we really want to see a sustainable hunting population of all the species of ducks down there. And there seems to be right now. But I think if we manage it and help the Argentines manage it, and we do that by buying hunts down there, and there's actually an outfitting group now that is not Ducks Unlimited Argentina, because our species don't travel down there. It's actually a group of outfitters that are funding this and working with the government to actually see the movements of these birds and hopefully be able to increase populations. And they don't hunt the ducks, but were you with when we would give ducks away? Mm-hmm. The people come on their bicycles from far away to meet us at the edge of the marsh in many of the places, and they each take their ducks. One operation I went to, Brett, you weren't with, but the police showed up. I thought, oh my goodness, we're in trouble. No, the police showed up because they wanted to pick the best ducks. So they picked the big, fat, rosy-billed poachers.
I think I might have been there for that, or that might have happened while we were there too, because I remember something like that happening.
Yeah, yeah, and the police show up. It's crazy, but think about it. They don't. It's not a robust economy down there. They're suffering. Their dollars all over the map. Our dollar on their illegal market, they call it down there, was 45 to 1, Brett. You
Holy
and I
smokes.
Were getting 20 to 1, I think.
I don't even know if we were getting that much. I thought it was like 13 or 14 or something.
Yeah, 45 to 1. Holy but they smokes. Have an official market, and then they have a blue dollar or whatever they call it, which is, the behind the curtain on the street exchange. But, yeah, experience is what it's about. And there's countless experience we had. Did you remember eating viscacha? What? It was like a pickled rabbit with capers. It's like a rabbit. It's an animal that looks like a rabbit. They remind me of that little pop-up game where you beat the little guys.
Whack-a-mole?
I knew you would know it. Whack-a-mole. So it's like whack-a-mole. These things come out at night and you hunt them, and everybody thinks you're taking them on a good old-fashioned Midwest snipe hunt when you tell them to stand there and wait and shoot this thing when it pops out of the hole. But they literally do, and they're absolutely a delicacy.
Delicious. Yeah, I wanted to talk about the food a little bit, because we did experience some different food down there. And I mean, everything about it was really cool. You know, you kind of brought it up earlier. People don't know what to expect going to a different country like that. They don't know what the lodging is going to be like, what the food is going to be like. But I'll tell you what, the outfitters we were with, great guys. The lodges are estancias. They were beautiful, beautiful buildings. The food was amazing. They had a big staff to help out with everything. That one lunch that we went to, I couldn't believe there was more people there serving us the food than there were eating the food. It was amazing. And like Damon, I mean, it's so nice to see just genuinely nice people in the industry down there. And I just had a great time with everyone we interacted with.
Yeah, and I think that's key. You mentioned that outfitter. His name is Damian Garcia. I've known him for many, many years. And he really takes pride in his operation and also in his country. He wants to do his best to show you his country. I know you went to the little place they made bread. That place has been around for over 100 years, that little bakery. We try to make sure everybody gets to see that while they're there and get a fresh loaf of bread out of the brick oven. And a lot of people call me and say, wow, that was amazing. That place is like it would have been 100 years ago.
You brought up the brick oven. There were brick ovens everywhere down there.
Yeah, you know, everybody cooks with wood fire, so they get their their coals, and then they put them in those big brick ovens, put the grate over the top, and you've been part of the asado, eating chimichurri. The asado means barbecue, and they make giant beef ribs and pork sausages and chicken, and they just keep bringing you food.
Yeah, and it was nice. They did cook up some of the stuff that we hunted too. Some of the ducks that we shot, and then the perdiz, of course, is amazing. It's a delicious bird.
Second only to rough grouse, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's where I put it. And you got to experience duck empanadas. Those ladies took a liking to you up in Entre Rios, and they kept making you duck empanadas. And I said, Mr. Brett likes those duck empanadas.
They were good.
Oh, see, we'll make some more. Those ladies were lovely up there.
Oh, yeah. Well, for sure. You know, and you and I have both been around waterfowl hunting for a long time and in the waterfowl industry and here in North America around guides and outfitters. And there are a couple of differences between how a waterfowl hunt is guided in North America versus, say, South America. As in, we get our naps in up here. But we have siestas when we're down there in Argentina. That's expected. Oh, okay, and I'll go siesta. Go back to your room.
They close businesses for siesta. When I used to go down there, you know, I was going 100 miles an hour all the time, and I'm like, hey, we got to go see this, this, this. And the people would say, oh, no, everything's closed. What do you mean it's closed? It's noon. They go home for siesta.
Yeah.
But that's their culture. That's their way of life. The other funny thing down there is driving around in the morning as waterfowlers, we leave the lodge typically 4:35 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You go through the little towns and you see young people walking around. I thought, wow, these people get up early here. They must be going to work. And of course, my outfitter back then said, they're not going to work. They're just going home. They party all night. The other thing is mate. You can't have a conversation about Argentina and not talk about mate. Many a hunting leases has been signed over a mate with that goofy straw. They pass it around. And boy, if you tease them about mate, you're in trouble.
Well, explain what mate is for our viewers.
Mate is a tea, Sherpa tea. And they pour it into this little cup, and I don't know the name of it. I've never taken much interest in it because to me it tasted horrible. And then they pour water in there, and then they use a straw that has the filter built into the straw. And they drink this thing, and they pass it around. Probably not right now with the coronavirus, but it's a very social way to interact down there. It's very normal, but I just can't see Americans passing around their Starbucks.
No, especially now when they pay $5-6 a piece for it. My coffee. Jim, walk us through a day. I mean, we've kind of touched on some of it, but walk us through what a day would be like for someone to go down there and do some duck hunting.
Well, you'd start off in the mornings. We assume you got there to the lodge. It's quite an extensive trip. You fly overnight. You get to the lodge. You wake up in the morning. You have a light breakfast normally. You head out to the blinds. We hunt two hunters to a blind normally. We don't put 4, 6, or 8. I see some outfitters here in North America putting 8 guys in a field. How do you know who shot a bird? It just gets ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But we get 2 people in a blind. A lot of times, like you and I did, Brett, we took turns shooting. Yeah. There was no hurry. We knew there was more birds coming. So we just took our time, and it's a lot of fun that way. Then you go back to the lodge. You're going to have anywhere from a 25 to 45 minute drive to the marsh. You might jump in a boat and go screaming down a river that you swear no one can see anything. Did you experience that? Didn't we do that once or twice?
I don't think we got in a boat. We talked about it, okay. But I don't think we made it in a boat.
So a lot of the blinds we have are drive up blinds because a lot of our hunters are older. So we can drive a 4-wheel drive truck right to the blind and then, you know, obviously drive away, and we have seats to sit on and very comfortable situation. But you're done usually by 10 o'clock. And then you go back to the lodge, gear up for either a full breakfast or lunch, or you have lunch in the field, take a siesta. And then the afternoon consists of one of two things. You either go dove hunting or you go perdiz hunting. And you know what I choose every time. I love the dog work.
Yeah.
I want to hunt the perdiz. And those perdiz gave you a challenge, because they fly different than any other bird. And I know you're safe like I am. You don't want to shoot someone's dog.
Right.
But they fly really low, don't they?
Yeah, I passed up a number of shots, actually. And I remember Damien's like, shoot it. And I'm like, man, I don't need to shoot it that bad when it's that close, you know. And obviously, he's been through that enough and been around those birds that it probably was a safe shot. But I'm just overly cautious when it comes to that, especially when it's not my dog. And they definitely gave – it's like they know they're a little bit safer if they fly low like that.
Yeah, it's weird. And you can't explain to people that they fly in singles and doubles almost every time. That's why they're so fun to work with a pointing dog, because they hold – and because we don't hunt in large group, it's not like a skirmish line in South Dakota. If you hunted behind a short hair or any of the pointers, you'd all have to gather upon that pointer and stop the drive and then spread back out. What we do is kind of just walk along and let the dogs hunt. And then we go up there and get behind the dog and release the dog, and one of us takes the shot. You know, again, usually we're hunting 2 people, maybe 3 for perdiz. We keep it small groups and very safe. And think about that. You can shoot 8 to 10 a day, depends on what the limits are that year. And that's just an afternoon hunt.
Yeah.
You know, you head out to many places in the Dakotas or wherever, you go out and shoot your three roosters, you're done for the day. This is just an afternoon fun hunt, and you're getting what used to be quail limits down south.
Yeah, and I passed up an amazing duck hunt. And I passed up a lot of shots and still shot plenty of perdis down there. What I thought was one of the most interesting parts of it is being a pheasant hunter. A lot of times you walk in taller grass or tall cattails. Being a rough grouse hunter, a lot of times you walk in through the woods, and it's, you know, especially if the leaves are still up, it's hard to see. Perdis, you're walking through grass about this tall.
And you still can't see them.
Right. I can't believe how well they can hide in that short grass.
Yeah, they're amazingly well camouflaged. If people don't know, they look kind of like the coloration of a hen pheasant and the size of in between a quail and a chucker. Now, there is other species of perdis down there that are much bigger, and they're hunted in the timber and stuff like that, but they're protected. The perdis we're hunting is the common perdis, and there's a lot of them. And it's from year to year with pheasants or rough grouse. I compare more to rough grouse because you don't stock perdis. Some years there's many, many. Some years there's, you know, low numbers. So you got to work hard and conserve them as well. We tend to not hunt them as much on the low years. On the bumper years, we do. And we do compete with local Argentines because they're very proud of their Argentine pointers.
Those dogs were amazing. I was very impressed with the dog work down there.
Yeah, we hunted with Brittany, and I think we hunted with Damien's Argentine pointer. They look like an English pointer to me, but if you call it an English pointer, again, you offend them. It's an Argentine pointer, and they'll let you know. But mainly I see German Shorthairs, Brittany's, and Argentine pointers, and they're all really good. Up north in Entre Rios, we hunted with an old dog, pretty sure, and that dog must have seen thousands of perdis in its life. It never missed a point.
Yeah, the dog work blew me away. I mean, obviously I was down there for the ducks. The perdis was a bonus. I didn't even realize we were going to hunt perdis when I got down there. And all of a sudden we're hunting an upland bird behind dogs. I was freaking out. It was so much fun. And I know a lot of people go to Argentina for the doves, and I'd always heard about it and how many hundreds of doves you can shoot in a day. And I enjoy dove hunting, but I was there for the ducks, and the perdis blew me away. And I had to get talked into dove hunting, Jim. And I don't know if you, well, I know, I'm sure you remember, but we got out there and all of a sudden I started seeing all these doves, and we set up on the edge of this field, and they were coming out of this forest to come feed in this field. And pretty soon it was just wave after wave after wave of doves. And at one point you took a great photo of me where I threw my arms up in the air and I said, I don't know which one to shoot at anymore. There was doves everywhere, Jim.
Right. And it can be like that was up north. Now down south in our area where we hunt, it's not quite as wild as that. But what I tell people in areas where we hunt the ducks and perdis as the combo hunt, to expect in an afternoon 8 to 15 boxes of shells. I mean, and that's slow. If we go to an area like Salta, there's no ducks there, but there's golden dorado, so we can do a cast and blast. But you're going to shoot as much as your Visa card will allow. And that's 2,000-3,000 shells a day if you want.
Holy smokes. That's unbelievable. Well, let's explain that. Let's get to the nuts and bolts on this. If somebody watching us right now says, okay, I'm going, when I can get down there, I'm going, what do I need to bring? How long is the trip? How do I book a trip? Explain some of that for us.
Well, the best thing to do is give me a call, and you can post my number and how to contact me after this. But basically, you need minimal gear. Because of travel restrictions with guns, we have great guns down there. Since you've gone down with Damien, we now have over 20 guns, even left-hand model, Benelli's, Berettas, and I think he has a couple other brands. You saw me. I was shooting a Turkish over-under, and I love the thing. It's probably a $400 gun here in the U.S., just a paddle, a boat paddle is what we use it for here, but that thing could kill birds. So sure. Basically, you're bringing your duck gear, and even we have a lot of waders down there now, but early season duck gear is what I tell people. You're not going to encounter ice or snow. Bring layers, bring some fleece wader pants if you like them. Heck, bring a pair of shorts and Crocs for running around in the evening around the lodge. Bring an upland vest, something orange for the perdiz, a good hat, sunglasses, some shooting gloves for the doves. You can wear your thumb out loading your gun if you're shooting an autoloader. I never knew you could wreck your thumb like this. Well, sticking those cartuchos up that tube gets a little tough when you're talking hundreds. And that's the basic stuff. You know, your medications, just very simple equipment list to go to Argentina. I've traveled with a carry-on bag.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah.
If you don't have to bring waders.
Right. And it was May. That's kind of the time frame. And I know it was probably a little bit warmer than typical time down there. But, I mean, we had like 80 degree days just about every day.
Yeah, that's way warmer than normal. Usually May is, 65, 70 highs max. And then it gets cooler in June and July. So we only hunt ducks normally 3 months. There is some exceptions. Someone will call me on it. Those hunts are depredation hunts, meaning the ducks have invaded someone's rice crop and they've got a government permission to go hunt them. But we hunt the regular season, which is May, June, July, and people want to schedule around moon phases and stuff. And I say, listen, yeah, in an ideal world, moon phases, hunt the dark moon, fish the dark moon. But you're going to get ducks no matter what down there. And they're going to fly in the morning no matter what, because we bait down in Argentina. Either natural bait, we have a lot of flooded fields. We have creeks that have fresh water in them that come off the brackish water. These birds come into these creeks, and I don't think you got to experience that. I've done it. It's amazing. You've got a 10-foot wide creek. You'll have 1,000 ducks come in the morning. Oof, to get into that fresh water. You know, they fed on grain and they're resting and loafing on this big saltwater marshes. Well, they can't drink that stuff. So they'll come to get that creek water, and it's just amazing. I just like to set the gun down and watch, and usually have some crazy experience like a capybara run by your feet because you're dug into the side of the bank of the creek, and you don't know what you'll get, but that's it. I mean, little bit of luggage, get on a flight. They always leave Atlanta, Dallas, Miami, whatever, in the evening. You're going to show up in Buenos Aires in the morning. The lodges that I work with, and I've learned this over the years, I don't do any internal flights. It's a pain. My guys pick you up at the airport in Buenos Aires, at the international airport. They take you to the lodge. I always recommend when you come back out, stay a couple days. If you can, get your wife to fly down and stay a week. Go see a lot of the sites of Argentina, go to wine country. The country's very accessible, very easy to get around on flights, very easy to hire drivers in the city. Don't rent a car. I don't recommend it. You saw how they drive in the city down there. It's like the NASCAR series. Yeah. A lot of bumping. it's nuts.
Yeah, stoplights and stop signs are all optional, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, I think they are. I've been going there like 20 years and I still don't know what the signs mean because no one follows them. There's two lanes, but there's four lanes. So it's very, very interesting place. I prefer not to drive down there. Yeah. And that's why I always have my guys pick our clients up at the airport.
It seemed like all the drivers are on the same page at least. So, and that was something else I wanted to bring up is, I tried to learn a little bit of Spanish before I went down there, and it was fun to try to communicate. And my Spanish was terrible, and I've forgotten a lot of the words that we used. You're kind of bringing my memory back on a few of those words in this interview, but, it was still easy to communicate with people. They pretty much probably understand English better than we understand Spanish. But getting around and not knowing the language very well was actually pretty easy.
Yeah, it is easy. Most people in Argentina speak English as their second language. Both our hosts speak great English.
Yeah.
I can understand them better than some of my Cajun friends. So. Sure. I've never had a problem with Camo down there. And let's face it, when you're duck hunting, you don't need a guy to tell you a whole lot.
No.
Which way is the wind? Where's the decoys? After that, there's not much to tell you. He doesn't need to tell you when to shoot. You know how to shoot. you experienced with me on when we went to the Great Big River up north. That was pretty amazing, and no one needed to tell us how to do anything because the ducks told us. They came in by the hundreds.
Yeah. Well, I know at one point we just kind of put the guns down and just watched them work. I grabbed the camera. I started just taking pictures, which is just as much fun to me nowadays. I don't know how many ducks if we wanted to, you could have shot a pile of them. And we shot plenty, but we were able to just sit back and enjoy the show, which, I don't know, that was a lot of fun to me, I think.
Do you remember the drone?
I do remember the drone. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, our host there had a drone and was flying the drone. There's actually a video on YouTube of it flying that in that great big rice area we went to one day where you're talking about the lunch. Mm-hmm. And the bird, there's birds that actually hit the drone. There's so many birds. There's probably 10,000 birds in that rice area then. And they're rosy-billed poachers. And if you're a duck hunter and you don't get excited about 10,000 ducks in a marsh that you can pretty much hunt with two of your buddies, you're a mess.
That property was amazing, Jim. I mean, all the properties were great, but that particular property there was amazing. And with that drone, there's actually, he filmed us shooting a little bit. In fact, I've got a picture of one of us. I can't remember. I think it was you. I bet I took the picture. I can't remember. But shooting a duck, and you can see the drone above us in the photo. So it was a pretty neat experience.
Yeah, it is, and that's the thing about Argentina. Everyone that goes wants to go back. It's like the Africa of wing shooting. Anybody I've ever sent to Africa big game hunting can't wait to go back. And the same with Argentina.
Well, it was an amazing adventure. Again, thank you for allowing me to come along and experience it like that. And we got just a couple of minutes left, and I just wanted to hit a couple other things real quick before I let you go. It's Cinco de Mayo, so we'd be remiss if we didn't mention trips to Mexico, and that's something that you've been doing too.
Yeah, you know what? I wasn't going to bring this up, but I'm supposed to be in Mexico right now in a place called Acamal, fishing the Mahi Run, and the sailfish are in, marlin are in, and we actually have a family beach house down there in Acamal, and we were scheduled to be there, and we're not, so I'm a little upset, but Mexico used to be one of the top destinations in North America for wing shooting. Because of the cartel issues down there, a lot of the outfitters left. They were pressured to pay, and they decided we're not going to pay anymore, we're going to leave. Well, some of those areas are opening back up, and they're incredible. And what I'm excited to share with you, you're the first person, nobody else knows this online or anything.
Wow.
I'm working on a quail area with a friend of mine that has more black-throated quail, which are like our bobwhite, than you can imagine. A morning hunt can produce 20 to 25 coveys.
Jeez.
Over well-trained dogs, beachfront hotel, seafood, tarpon fishing in the afternoon, maybe some permit bonefish. We got to go down and test it again. But a friend of mine used to run that area years ago and was book solid every year. So we finally talked some guys to invest, some Mexican folks that are going to invest and open that back up. There's no ducks there, but it's going to be probably the best wild quail hunting on the planet.
Wow. Well, quail and seafood and, you know, fishing, it sounds terrible, Jim. It sounds terrible.
And you got to quit in the morning because it gets warm. It's on the Yucatan Peninsula, so it gets warm. So you're probably going to have to have a little siesta time and a little pool time too, a little Cinco de Mayo.
Ah, sounds good. The last thing I want to bring up too is you, like me, have done what I call diversified your income, in that you have multiple irons in the fire doing a couple of different things, including working with food plots.
Yeah, you know, I started about a little over a decade ago. Some friends came to me from South Dakota. They own a company called Legend Seed, and they had a product called Canamaze, which is a 69-day Roundup Ready corn, 65-day conventional corn, which is the fastest growing Roundup Ready corn in the world. Well, it turns out it's ideal for food plots, not really for production agriculture, because it's kind of a dwarf corn, small corn. But for duck hunting, I sell a lot of it down south because they flood it, and those ears are only a foot from the ground. So what does that mean? You need less water, easier to walk through your field. You don't need a boat. You can walk out. So that's been great. And we also sell it to pheasant operations a lot in South Dakota because it's only 4.5 feet tall.
Oh, perfect.
Guys like you and I can walk through there. It's very safe. You're not going to get shot, you know, by the person next to you by walking through tall corn. And that's a huge concern of outfitters in South Dakota. That happens more than you know. People getting BBs, you know, hitting them in the head and side and dogs. But I'm diversifying that into sunflowers and several other varieties of higher yield corn for feeding deer all winter. Also, a product that's really hot right now is barrier corn. You know, tall corn that you put along the edge of your main food plot. So those deer will come out a little earlier in the evening. So like a fortress.
Interesting.
And you put up five rows of this tall 12-foot corn, 10, 11-foot corn, whatever it is, and wall in your pond or your alfalfa or your other plots. So that's exciting. And something on the in the not-too-far future that's I believe is going to take the food plotters by storm is industrial hemp.
Hmm.
Industrial hemp produces amazing amount of seeds. And no, don't start thinking the doves are going to come in all crazy. Wild.
Hey, man.
Yeah, hey, man. It's like Cheech and Chong doves. But it's a great food source, an amazing cover against avian predators. You know, think of these hunting preserves that are put and take. They put birds out in the morning, and they a percentage of those disappear by the time the client shows up because the hawks and falcons and everybody else comes to dinner and eats their birds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this has a lot more cover. So as states open up to allowing hemp to, industrial hemp to be grown, and we can get away from what's called, you know, must harvest laws, meaning after it's inspected for THC levels, it has to be harvested. Once we can leave it in the field and leave that food there, it's going to be amazing, Brett. That that grain, we'll call it, for doves is unbeatable. They still hunt ditchweed in Nebraska, and it's one of the best crops to hunt. It's old World War II volunteer ditchweed.
No kidding.
Hat out of the bag, but it's excellent.
Interesting. Well, give us the location where we can find out about more of all these things. So if somebody wants to go check out this new quail trip to Mexico, or if they want to get in on the duck hunting in Argentina and the perdiz, of course, or if they want to learn about these food plot options, where can they find out more information?
Yeah, the best thing to do is most of my stuff is all through referral and calls. I don't put a lot on the internet anymore. But you can go to RileysOutdoorConsulting.com. That's R-I-L-E-Y-S, OutdoorConsulting.com. You can pull that website out. You can find my contact information. You can call or email me. But, man, I'm old-fashioned. In the world of automation, pick up the phone, call, and I can take one question, and we can end up talking about 20 other things and get them all answered. This emailing back and forth for days just doesn't make sense to me when you can knock it all out in 10 minutes in a good phone call.
So you don't do a lot of Skype is what you're saying?
No, this is like the first time I feel like an animal at the zoo looking through the glass.
Yeah, it's new for all of us, I think, in this world that we're living in, it's getting more and more common. Jim Riley, again, thanks for the time. Glad everybody's safe and healthy. Good luck with everything, and thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Brett. Have a good day.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazon Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazonLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazon Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fishing you've ever had in your life.
At TazonLake.com. That's TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan. We'll be right back.